All right, I've got Matt Medeiros here with me, and we're trying something new on post status, and I'm going to complement a post with a little bit of an audio interview. So Matt has agreed to be my guinea pig on this project. So happy to have you here, Matt. Welcome.
Ryan, I am excited to be here and happy not to be just the guinea pig, but to be the number one choice for your show. And your new foray into the podcasting world.
Yeah, well, I'm going no commitments on this.
Okay.
Haven't even named it yet, so, or at least not officially. But my goal, I guess, would be that if I have a post that, might require an interview anyway, this gives me a good opportunity to kind of give that raw output that I get from people that I talk to. So be warned that anything you say here, I might or probably will include on the post itself, but
That's
hopefully
no problem with me. It's the way I do things too, so.
you're always on the record, aren't you?
Yep.
So yeah, but I'll probably take some of this content and put it in a longer form post as well for post status. So what I'm really interested in today, for those that don't know you, Matt, you are kind of the go-to business podcast guy in addition to all the other work you do, and I'm looking forward to learning about that. But you've interviewed some of the most influential people in the WordPress community, and you've gotten a lot of really good insight, and I've learned a lot from the Matt Report, which is your primary podcast, I guess. And I really wanted to have an opportunity to interview the interviewer, learn your motivations, learn more about you, and just kind of get some insight from the person that I usually listen to interviewing and asking these questions to other people. So I hope you don't mind if we kind of reverse the format on you.
Let's do it.
So why don't you just get started by telling me a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what you do?
Sure thing. So, Matt Medeiros, just outside of Boston, run a little WordPress shop called Slocum Studio. I have my podcast over at MattReport, and the stuff that we're doing is, pretty typical to your WordPress consultancy. We're working with marketers and other folks building WordPress sites. I'm sure the more attractive part of all this is the podcasting that we do. And I say we, it's not just me, it's my entire team. So of course I host the Matt Report, which is the WordPress business podcast. But then the studio has a couple other shows called Press This, SEO Lunch, Fresh Dev, and Week in WordPress. The first three are video only. And the fourth, Week in WordPress, is a mix of YouTube, Google Hangout, and iTunes. We'll talk about all kinds of things about WordPress, show you WordPress plugins and themes, talk about the themes that we develop, and all kinds of WordPress related news. And everything surrounding WordPress, we try to cover the whole range.
So you've got, sounds like, four shows through Slocum Studio, the Matt Report, and I've even heard you've done a experimentation with something called the 30 Spot. So you're doing six podcasts right now, is that right?
It is pretty crazy. I haven't done a 30 spot in a while, but as we record today, I'm just getting back from Pressnomics, and there's a whole bunch of things that I'd like to cover on a 30 spot either tonight or tomorrow. But yeah, that is an experiment that I'm running.
Nice. So between these shows, how many subscribers do you have?
That's a great question. On YouTube, we're just nearing the 2,000 mark of subscribers via YouTube. We've got a ton of folks who tune in that we're still trying to entice to subscribe. MattReport is well over 1,000. So pretty excited about that. And the audience is still growing, especially in the MattReport side. So we're really, really happy to see the results. And it's been a year worth of hard work. The numbers aren't staggering, but they're pretty good for little old WordPress and the content that comes out of it.
Was there a point in the show where you really started to see growth? Like, did it have a pretty linear curve, or what was the growth like to get to 2,000 subscribers?
Yeah, so it was month over month we saw our growth, and a lot of the stuff that we were doing in our consulting world, like not just here's how you use WordPress, or here's what WordPress is all about, but you know, what other things connect to WordPress? So the example is SEO Lunch. We talk about, you know, web marketing using your WordPress website, right? So it's those types, it's that type of connection that we've made to, you know, sort of the boring, dry technical aspects of WordPress, plugins, themes, landing pages, things like that. But giving people real world examples of how to market themselves or their business, you know, the fun web markety way also meets the technical WordPress way. So it's definitely a good mix.
Nice. Well, I want to back up just a little bit. I know you're doing these things now and you've got Slocum Studio, but I mean, how'd you get involved in the web industry in general, and how'd you find WordPress on that journey?
Sure. So real quick story about this is growing up, and a lot of folks who follow me know that I was in the car sales business, but I was also, when I was in college, I also worked part-time at a Circuit City when they were still in business, and I was selling computers. And back then, computers were like $5,000, $6,000 for a complete setup, right? Outrageous prices to what we see now. And I'll never forget the day that, so this is like what, 19 years old, 20 years old, maybe. And somebody came in looking for an open box computer, basically a computer that's already been used and returned, looking for the cheapest thing he could buy. I remember selling him a 500 megahertz NEC tower. And I'm like, what are you going to do with this like low, slow, you know, weak computer? I mean, like maybe 512 megs of RAM. So he's like, I'm going to install Linux on this. And I was like, what the heck is Linux? And you could still buy software off the shelf back then, and you could buy Linux off the shelf, and there was a version called Mandrake Linux. So I was like, wow, this is really interesting. So given this was, you know, 15 years ago or whatever, I went over to Barnes and Noble's and bought the Linux Bible, which came with a version of Red Hat, which was, Red Hat was free at the time. And from there, it was just a snowball effect. I bought myself a used computer. I installed Linux on it. I was installing Apache. I was using PostNuke or PHP Nuke, it might have been called back then. This was like way before Firefox. It was Firefox, and I think it was called Firebird or something like that. And that just really got me into the whole application layer. Fast forward, I started working at an ISP when I got out of college, and I was a support person, you know, level one. I worked my way all the way up to a product manager, to the point where I was actually deploying solutions like cPanel, when cPanel first hit the scene, and I was managing, you know, thousands and thousands of hosting accounts for that company, and we were just putting these applications into place. That company then acquired another company which had a web development arm primarily around Drupal, and I was tasked with managing that team and managing the solutions coming out of that team. And this is well before the financial crisis. This is when people were just throwing money around at anything on the internet, and Drupal sites were sort of just whatever. You know, we heard it's big, we heard it's robust, let's take it. I don't care what the price tag is. And then shortly after the economy started to slow, we had to look for an alternative, and some of the guys on the team looked at WordPress, and it all started from there. And then spinning off my own company after I left that company, and that's sort of the real quick how I got into WordPress.
Based on your timeline talking about the financial crisis, I assume you mean the one in 2008, not 2001, right?
That's correct. So the economy was really starting to get, we saw the tech economy really start to collapse around the 2006 mark. So, I mean, people willing to invest into building a website, right? By that time, it was pretty saturated, and that's when there was a lot of competition coming out. Not that competition doesn't exist now, but that's when we really saw a slow down in people wanting to invest $30,000, $50,000, $60,000 for websites, in Drupal sites for that matter. It just became a beast, and it was just too much to handle.
Sure. So it's interesting to me that it sounds like you really came into this more from the tech side than the business side, and now you're really focusing on the business aspect of WordPress. So at what point, I mean, how did you transition from just being excited about, you know, Linux and Apache and what you could do with these tools to understanding kind of some of the business solutions that could come from these tools?
Yeah, so this is actually, I mean, my intrigue for tech has always been there. all the way down to when I was a very young kid working on, you know, my dad's DOS computer, like trying to boot up a game, trying to like learn command lines, executable so I could start up a game. So that's, the tech has always been there, but it's my upbringing in business and sales that really made me want to marry the two, right? And that's actually what allowed me to go from just your typical intern support tech to somebody who was, you know, pivotal in creating technology at an ISP, because I was able to see the business side of things, right? And so I could understand how a customer is going to implement technology and what kind of features they wanted, what kind of support they wanted. And it was my background of working with my family at the local dealership, customer service, sales, cold calling, all that fun stuff, to really engage a customer with the tech side and sort of marry the two. And, you know, I got into the business side for WordPress because it's what I'm really, really good at. It's like, it's the part that comes natural. Whereas the tech side, it's, you know, like anything else, I'm always keeping up with it, and I'm certainly not a developer or a coder, so I try to stay away from that, especially to the audience like this, who's well-versed in it.
So did Slocum Studios start while you're still with the ISP, or did you have like a cold turkey cutoff? How did you get to where you are today?
Sure. So I had an understanding with one of the founders of that other company, which, you know, he allowed me to work on this business, this startup. And it sort of happened where my dad was getting out of the automotive dealership. This is like 2 years before GM went bankrupt. So he started his own like photography business, and he's always been a pro photographer. And it kind of started where he got a client that wanted a website, and it certainly wasn't going to fit the need of where I used to work before, because we would have charged him too much money. So I kind of built it for him on the side with my WordPress knowledge back then. And you know, he got another client, and it just, again, snowball effect. And then when he got out of the business, you know, he was just looking to build something together, and there I was going right back into a new family business with my father. And he started the auto dealership with my grandfather before me. So it's sort of fitting in that sense.
So your dad's still part of the everyday business with Slocum Studio?
Yeah, he sure is. You know, he's part of doing the outside sales, bringing in clients, helping clients, and seeing the whole vision for the overall studio.
Nice. And I hear you talk about being in the car industry a decent amount, and I also have heard you talk about, I think, a publication that y'all have something to do with in your locality, and how there's sometimes involves door-to-door sales. But, you know, in the WordPress community, sales is kind of like a dirty word in some people's minds, or at least, you know, working hard for sales. You seem to hear about people saying, hey, you know, the work just comes to me and I do it. Do you think that this industry is going to continue to get more competitive? And kind of what have you learned from the car industry and from any other instances where you've had a lot of sales experience? And tell me about how you think that's going to eventually impact WordPress and the web.
This is a great question. It's a topic that I love. It's also something that really was the part of the birth of Matt Report. I like to look at Matt Report as a big pie, and there's all these different slices, but this is definitely one of the majority slices. Was, you know, growing up in the web industry and listening to web marketing, right? Sort of that analytical keyword stuffing, just create a post and they'll come to you, offer them, you know, three different prices, and they'll, you know, pick them one in the middle, and then just grow your email list and send out emails, so on and so forth. You know, listening to that, and I think that's kind of going away because of what Google's doing with SEO as we know it, or as at least as we knew it for the last 2 years. And I would always hear WordPress thrown around as just like this throwaway, like, just install WordPress, it's free, grab 50 plugins, install them, grab a free theme, slap it together, and instantly you're going to be a millionaire. Well, knowing the business side of it, we know that it doesn't scale, right? And we know that once you hit that $1 million revenue mark, you're going to want something a little bit more engaging and better built to sustain this kind of business. So, yes, I think that at least up until now, we're going to see changes come from sort of this kind of kickback and if you build it, they will come mentality. And that's something that I've never bought into because I've always worked, right? I've always put a lot of effort in behind making a sale. Sure. So things could have been different if we just did, you know, if we didn't have the overhead of a real studio and buying equipment and hiring people locally. I could have just outsourced everything, worked from home, not had the overhead of a real studio. But the whole experience is different. It's just not the way we are. We want to bring people in. We want to introduce them to a real team. We want people to shake hands. We want to bring people in to deliver their websites as if we were delivering a car when we can. So that whole experience is very important to us. And yes, I think you're absolutely right. A lot of people in WordPress, and I wrote about this today, my review of Pressnomics, they're afraid of competition. They're afraid of the sales thing. And one half of me doesn't blame them from listening to all these web spammy marketers. But on the other half, you have to get out of your seat to produce or else you'll never be found and you're never going to be happy with the position that you're in because you're saying, oh, how do I find clients? How do I bring people in? How do I sell them? Look, you just have to get up and start doing it. And it starts with marketing yourself and branding yourself. The other publication you're talking about is a local travel guide. And look, we're not in like Miami or Florida or we're 45 minutes south of Boston. The biggest city next to us is New Bedford, which was once the whaling city capital of the world, right? So like that's our cornerstone to tourism. That and Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket, which are like the islands, which brings in a lot of revenue. But we're trying to sell the South Coast, and it's a very, very small market. And starting from absolutely nothing and literally going door to door, that's our community thing, right? When we're in the dealership, we were able to give back to the community. And we were always just trying to figure out, well, how can we do that with WordPress and our core services? And we're going to build a beautiful tour site for our area built on WordPress. And we're going to, you know, give back to the local businesses by promoting them. And we do that in print and web. But it's not easy.
So is your average web client somebody within, you know, 50-mile radius of where you live, or do you work all over?
Yeah, so over the years, over the last 4 or 5 years, I've been fortunate enough to work with folks like 10Up, Jake Goldman, other agencies like Oomph, and been able to get experience in that realm, which has led us to be able to build some pretty powerful things, and which has exposed us to a larger audience. So we've clients from all over. Most WordPress business that we do will come from the Boston area, but then, you know, then it's just from there, it's very little local, unfortunately, but mostly national, from Seattle to California to Florida, back up the East Coast. We've clients from all over.
Do you have a preferred type of client? Like, will you take on a $3,000 job if the, you know, if the scope of work is right, or do you want to stick to a certain range, or will you build a $100,000 project? What's your typical site look like and process maybe for going about those projects?
Yeah, another great question. So the wheelhouse is usually 10 to 15,000, and you know that's your typical 60-90 day. Sort of engagement from, you know, scratch to launch. And we will, it's funny you bring that number up because that's the number. We had a Monday morning meeting today and we still do $3,000 websites and we still pitch them to the local folks, but in a very contained fashion, like here's what you're going to get, here's what you'll be able to do with your website. But the good client is somebody who is, who already understands, if not, you know, someone who understands WordPress, and if they don't understand that, at least that they understand that they have, they need to be publishing a blog and connecting to other applications. Because let's face it, WordPress in the end is really just a tool to most customers, right? They don't really love WordPress like we do, although I try my hardest to get them to. They're really looking at getting leads and being able to publish content and make sales if they're an e-commerce site. But a majority of our business is coming from partnerships with other marketing and PR firms, right? So these are folks that are out there selling to even larger portfolioed clients, and they just don't have the knowledge of WordPress or tech, for that matter, especially mobile, especially email lead capture, things like that. And then they just source to us, and we just build the tech for them, and we never talk to the client.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's probably a not super well discussed genre of the market, I guess, in consulting. I think that exists quite a bit, a lot of subcontracting, but people tend not to talk about it as much for some reason. So it's good to hear you talk about y'all's role and relationship like that. Do you find that there's extra challenges when you're working with another agency and you don't necessarily have direct contact to the client, or does it make things easier sometimes?
It makes things easier on the support side of things, because in the long run, we're not engaged with the client, so we don't have to deliver the site. And maybe we sort of, I don't even know what the word is, I overstate our delivery, or I don't know what it is, but we put a lot of emphasis on making sure that the client understands what they have, they know how to use it, and it's still an ongoing thing that we're always trying to hone. And we don't have to do that with sort of our partners, because they're taking care of that. And these are people that are creating a whole ad campaign, whether it be, whatever, TV, radio, stuff like that. So we're just a piece of the puzzle. But it does break down when our partner doesn't know how to pitch tech, or they do a discovery process and it's like, hey, they want, 7,000 call to actions on the homepage. And oh, by the way, this has to fit on the screen of an iPhone. And then we're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. There's no way we can make this happen. And that's where sort of that process breaks down. Just like any other client, this time it's just dealing with people that kind of get it. So when you say, no, like technology can't bend that way, at least they get it. And it's not like, oh, why I talked to my cousin's nephew who lives in his basement and he says he can do it. So it helps that way.
Yeah. It seems like you're diversifying your business a good bit as well. I apologize if you can hear my dog. She's chewing a bone in the background. But nope. With the diversification of your business, I say that, but it seems like maybe it's in elementary stages for some of what I've been exposed to. One of those is, I see that y'all have been releasing a couple of themes recently and you're not charging for them. Are you using those as maybe an avenue where you could make money in the future, or are you using it as a lead generation tool? What's your strategy with those? And maybe just tell me a little bit about the themes in general.
Yeah. When we started 4-5 years ago, I know it's still dangerous to think that we still consider ourselves a startup. One would think that by now we would figured out what we want to do. but as we know, we just have to keep sort of in this agile state. And one of them is, cutting back a lot of our local services. And that used to be like video production and photography. We used to do a lot of that and print production, like everyone does when they start out in the beginning, to just cast a wide net. We're really starting to narrow it down. The good thing is we're able to use the video and photo stuff for our podcast production, which is good use of those assets. But now we're getting into the theme development. And much like our podcasting, you can buy the pro themes, which is basically the support and some extra colors and some added features. But primarily we're giving away for free on .org, trying to build our audience, just like we're building our audience through podcasting and YouTube, and sort of figure out, hey, we don't want to just jump into the game and, spend a couple months, develop a dozen themes and put up your typical theme shop. We're trying to do things a little bit different, and that's probably a good thing or a bad thing. But I just don't want to be another just typical theme shop. We are trying to do things slightly different, to the, you know, as different as we can possibly do it with a WordPress theme and offering. But it's been a very educational and good learning experience, for lack of a better word.
Have you seen, I guess, both the themes and podcasts, have you seen those bring in projects, or has that not really been brought to fruition yet? What's it been like for getting, you know, converting listeners or people that download your themes into actual clients that give you money?
Another great question, and one that I was fielding a lot of at Pressnomics this past weekend. Everyone was asking, from 10Up's Jake Goldman to Shane Perlman of Modern Tribe. Everyone was like, "Hey, you know, how is your audience going? You know, are you making money off of this stuff?" And the answer is yes. We're certainly funneling in sales to our themes since we launched at the end of August now. So a couple months, we've already seen some of our pro themes, you know, flying off the shelf, which has been good. You know, I'd say half of them were actually discovered through our YouTube channel, the other half just .org. And the Matterport stuff, the Matterport hasn't brought me direct ROI on any kind of project, but what it has done is open up the field for more introductions, some partnerships, some recognition, you know. And we do like to say that we have probably the widest range, if not the number one podcast web shows on the web. So we've been using it as some leverage because we work really hard at it. And one thing I just have to add is, just like you've seen sort of the overhead and the time suck that podcasting and media production is, and I don't need to tell you this because you have the leading WordPress news site on the web, that it takes a lot of work, right, to get this stuff done. So we are confident with sort of the stuff we're producing. We do use it as leverage if somebody's comparing us to another shop.
Yeah, there's definitely no alternative to investing time into a project like that. So I can certainly relate. And I've also noticed some of those maybe non-monetary benefits. You know, you might make a little bit of money here or there off of a project like that, but it's really hard to replace the relationships that I've made. And I know you've done the same with the Matterport and the relationships you've made from that. So it's, you know, I know I've told you before, but you know, I got to know you basically through your podcast. I found your podcast, and then it's gotten to the point to where I can't miss one because I always want to catch up on what's going on and who you are interviewing and what they have to say. So it's been a great learning resource for me, but I feel like I know you and your company better because of that. So I guess I'm a direct, you know, result of some of those efforts that you've made.
Yeah, and I just want to add one other thing to this. This is the hard work, walking door to door kind of sales pitch. Like, it's, I don't even like to call it a sales pitch, but it's that door to door sales, right? Like, I'm working really hard to produce something, and sure, the Matterport, I could do a paid mastermind, or I could do a monthly membership. And I'm not saying I'm not going to do that stuff, because at some point I want to buy a new laptop with all my efforts from the Matterport. And I'm not even joking. I do. But I look at it from, I need to produce something really good that I know people love. And I heard people say the same stuff you said. And it means that so far, like, that's my reward. Like, everyone's saying, "I love this stuff. I'm so glad somebody's talking about it." Mm-hmm. But from the more practical sense, look at what everything's, like your previous question, like Google and SEO, like, this is the stuff you have to do in order to get people to realize that, hey, this is a real company, because I think that, or there's a real team behind this company, because I think it's that kind of transparency where SEO and web marketing is going. It's not just, again, it's not just keyword stuffing and meta description. You know, this is real selling, I guess, for 2013 into 14.
Yeah, and I think, especially in the WordPress industry that I've seen, a lot of people really do like that, you know, build it and they will come mentality. But I think some of those same people that are saying that benefited from a very young market. And I think as the market matures, I agree with you, this is the type of thing that's going to be necessary. And this style of marketing will help you get your name out there and help you get to know people in your industry. And new people getting into the market, they probably need to be careful, you know, just thinking they can build something or they can write something and people will use it or read it. It takes a lot of time, and you've been doing the Matt Report for a year now, right?
Yep. Episode 52 went out a couple weeks ago to the day, actually, of when I published the first episode. Totally, like, not even, like, I don't follow, there's no editorial calendar. It's just, I do them, I post them. Some weeks is zero, some weeks is two, but it averaged out literally to the day. Every week it went out on average, and that was totally not, I wasn't aiming for that. It just happened, oddly enough. But yeah, after a year, starting to show some of that more social traction where people are recognizing me out at different places and at WordCamps and such, not like restaurants, recognizing me at WordCamps and Pressnomics and stuff. And yeah, it's been really good. And look, the inside sauce, and this goes back to selling. When I started my studio is roughly when, if not like in the same month that Jake started 10 Up, right? And I don't like to copy people. I don't like to say, like, you know, you should set your sights on being that same person, because everybody has a different strategy and everybody's unique. But he's at 30 people. I'm at 4 people. So it's two totally different things. But I knew that being early in the market was a huge leg up to folks like 10 Up or even web dev. And I wasn't able to compete at that level, because I wasn't a technical co-founder in the sense, which is another thing. But I fancy myself somebody who's good at just networking and making connections. So that was my, you know, sort of my leverage to getting my studio recognized and not having sort of those early day handshake partnerships with some of the, inside sources that is WordPress.
Yeah. And the perception of consultants and web development agencies is really interesting to me. I actually, in my off week right now, that's why I have this opportunity to interview right during the middle of the day. But until recently, you know, I was with a 20-plus person web development agency, and they were doing almost 100% WordPress work. So in WordPress world, that's pretty big, but
right,
nobody really knew who they were within this sphere because of the way they were marketed and they were more regional. And I have a feeling that that's probably the case in every state in the country and probably in many countries throughout the world where, you know, pretty large web development agencies are using WordPress as a tool for a huge percentage of their work. And somehow there's been this focus on a handful of agencies that have really done a great job of marketing and being super involved in the community. And it's kind of been fascinating to see how much people focus on them. And, you know, you just mentioned 10 Up and Web Dev, and those are the two that people seem to say all the time. But what do you think causes that? And what have you learned from those agencies, and how, or what of that is necessary in terms of how it applies to your bottom line, do you think?
Oh man, that's a great question. And I'm not afraid to speak my mind. I guess I'll preface it with that. And look, I don't know. I do know, because I interviewed Brad, and I don't really know his backstory, but I know Jake really well, and I'm friends with Jake. I consider him a friend, and we chatted at Pressnomics. But Jake, aside from being super smart and a technical co-founder and just somebody who's just super smart, aside from that, he was in it very early. He was able to forge relationships with WordPress. .com, .org, other influential heads of WordPress that, as we know it, very early on. And, you know, I'm not saying that's the only reason, but it's certainly like a reason. And I don't think he would deny that. And it's no fault, right? It's not a fault. It's just he was there at the right time. And we hear this from all kinds of entrepreneurs, not just WordPress people. Everyone is in the right place at the right time. Facebook was in the right place at the right time. That's how it all kind of starts. And, you know, there's no real organic way to get to that because you're just there in the time. You know, and I'm assuming that's the same kind of thing that happened with web dev. And, you know, it does impact your bottom line, because here's a perfect example, something I rant about all the time, is that, you know, .com partnerships, right, for VIP. Or, yeah, I should say VIP partnerships, not .com partnerships. So VIP partnerships.
WordPress VIP.
WordPress VIP is a massive gleaming example of being there first. And folks were able to really enjoy the benefits of being in early on the partnership stuff until... you know, maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I called up because we did work on a project with TenUp that exposed us to some VIP, not some, all VIP experience. So I called up and I said, hey, look, we have the experience. How do we get onto this program? And it was a $30,000 buy-in that wasn't open yet, but it was going to be a $30,000 buy-in. Now, I'm not going to drop $30,000 in the hopes that somebody's going to come as a lead. No way. Don't have the revenue to just throw 30 grand at that. I would take out a TV spot or a radio spot before I did something that crazy. Mm-hmm. But that's a shining example of being in early. And again, it's not a fault to anybody. This is open source, right? This is organic. This is, you know, this is WordPress finding its legs, learning how to walk. The good side of it is 20% of the internet is powered by WordPress. The bad side of it is it's like this democracy that no one's really the head of, and we're all kind of working together to figure it out. Hey, and this is what happens. So you have to perform. You have to go door to door, right, and figure out how to get there. And that's what I'm doing every day.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it in terms of how important those relationships are. And I'm sure that a lot of these companies that you know, we think of WordPress consultants, really, they got their name out there because of relationships. And I guess, like you said, relationships with the right people. So you've interviewed a lot of people with the Matt Report, and I'm sure you've learned a ton. Based off those interviews, what would you say is kind of a common thread? Something that you've seen, a characteristic of your guests, or a work ethic, or whatever it might be. What's something that you've seen that really makes these people stand out? That maybe somebody that's looking out there and saying, "Hey, man, these people are super successful, doing all sorts of crazy stuff. I want to be there. I want to get there." What advice do you have for those people?
Another great question. We could dedicate an entire show to sort of some of the stuff that I've learned from the entrepreneurs. And, you know, most commonly it is the blind, passion that folks have. And by blind passion, I mean that they don't care what other people are doing. They're passionate about what they have to offer, and they're going to go out and do it. And, you know, that's the most common thing. I mean, again, in a world of analytics and, you know, A/B testing and search and all this technical stuff, people get lost in, you know, comparing. And, you know, I saw a perfect example. I don't want to fly too far off the tracks, but I saw a service launch the other day that could track your competitors' A/B tests, right? And I'm just thinking to myself, like, there's just no need for this. Like, you're going to be stressed out. You're going to be watching people's A/B tests, and then you're going to look at, sure, I mean, you take a glance over. I mean, don't get me wrong. I look at web dev. I look at TenUp. I look at Woo Themes. And I say, okay, here's how they did it. Yeah, maybe we'll try it this way. Or maybe we'll do it the exact same. I mean, at some point, a car is a car. A theme is a theme. We just need to make the sale. And if somebody doesn't buy from us, oh, well, we just find another way to do it. But that common thread of, you know, just getting out there and starting it is what a lot of the successful folks have done. And failure is the number two, because inevitably we fail And it's how we pick ourselves back up again, which truly brings us to that successful outcome. Because if you fail and you can't get back up, unfortunately, that's the worst part. And it's those stories of failure that really resonate, because people are always afraid. They're always afraid to fail. They're always afraid to show their goods, because they're afraid to be rejected. And we're no different. We're failing every single day, and it's the best way to learn.
Have you ever interviewed somebody and you don't, or just talked to somebody in general, and you don't have to, please actually don't say names or anything, but you just wonder, how did this person get here? Maybe you don't see their vision, or you don't see really what it was that got them to where they are. And do you wonder how have they gotten there, but I'm not there? Is there ever that tendency to want to doubt why someone's in a position, and maybe you're not there quite yet? Or have you been lucky and everybody you've met, like, you've really been inspired by them? How's that envy level been?
I'm going to throw out a name, Tom McFarland. No, I'm just kidding. No, Tom's a great guy. We all know that. So it's funny. I won't name a name, but I did have somebody, and anybody who follows me knows that at one point I had like 6 or 8 shows recorded that I lost. Mm-hmm. This one particular person that I had interviewed, I had lost. But I think I had some tweets out there about how much money they made through themes. You know, and I was looking at their site, and I was like, God, how does this person make this much money with themes? Like a handful of themes, and we have a handful of themes. We don't make this much money. And then I tweeted some stuff out, like questions during the show or whatever. And another unnamed source sent me a message and like, hey, look, I don't believe any of those numbers. They just want to use your show as a platform to just be exposed. And then I never reached out to re-record that episode with that person, but that really made me think and really say, look, whoa, like now I'm doing a disservice to my audience. Like, if I'm bringing somebody on who is not who they say they are, or it's not genuinely what they're doing, I now have to kind of vet this person. So of course they have to share as much as they can, but folks have showed me PayPal receipts or, you know, PayPal screens or whatever of income to kind of validate it. And I suspect, as I kind of grow my audience and get more entrepreneurs on, and as we see WordPress do some application stuff, folks will be making a lot more money. And, it's going to be even more important that I kind of validate them. But yes, the other half of your question, what is the envy level like? I'm envious of everybody, right? and again, it comes down to that competitive nature that I'm not afraid to talk about. And a perfect example would be Corey Miller of iThemes. I finally got to meet him. Nicest guy ever, right? They say he has the sexiest voice on stage, being from the South. And, you know, he sat up there with Carl Hancock and Pippin. And here's three guys that, you know, put out plugins. And at any point, any one of them could, you know, pivot and add one of their competitor plugins. And Corey's not afraid to say that. Look, he just came out with Exchange, right? You know, he's friends with Pippin, and there's a direct competition right there. And it's just, number one, it's business. You have to be comfortable with that. And number two, ultimately in the end, you've got different segments. Sort of a bit of a rant, but yeah, I mean, I'm envious of everybody that I met at Pressnomics, because I'm always trying to get better every day. So yeah, it's, I'm never like, I don't care what everybody does. I put that into effect when I'm building a product. Like, I see what somebody else is doing, and I'm just like, okay, here's how we're going to do it. So I don't get blinded, or I don't let that interfere with me. Yeah. Somebody's success is when I'm like, damn, I need to get there.
Yeah. I guess it's maybe an evil part of our human nature to compare ourselves to those around us.
And yes.
In our large community, you know, it's natural to see what other people are doing and wonder, how would we do it differently? Or, you know, can I do that? So it's good to hear that you're human too. And, mm-hmm. 'Cause I know I do that. I mean, pretty much anything I write about, I'm critiquing it and analyzing it and wondering, you know, how would I do this differently? But what I found encouraging is, you know, people, they welcome that feedback. And something that I like on your show is you always talk about how once you go talk to these people and you get to know them, they're no different than anyone else. And you know, they just worked hard and they've done a lot of sweat equity to get to where they are. And some of them are still working on that. You know, they're trying to get viable. There might be companies that are making $1 million or $2 million or $3 million a year, but they're not quite viable yet. So they have some of the same uncertainties as any of us do. And that's been one of my favorite things that I've learned from the Matt Report, is just that sometimes you're able to get someone to tell a story like that, where they talk about, you know, how much they still feel like there's left to do when they may look on top of the world to, you know, somebody from the outside looking in.
Yeah. And just to add to that a little bit is I try to bring on people who just aren't even involved in WordPress. They simply use WordPress as a tool. Number one, to give you and I, folks who are building solutions on WordPress or actually contributing to WordPress.org, the angle or the insight of how a common folk might use WordPress. I bring on a lot of authors who use WordPress, other marketers who just aren't even touching code or even HTML, to try to get their feedback so that we can see it in a different perspective. So yeah, it is good stuff.
So I've enjoyed pretty much every episode I've listened to, and I feel like I've had an opportunity to learn from all of those people. But is there a guest that you've had that you've really just walked away inspired?
Yes, Tom McFarland. No, sorry, Tom. You don't get both accolades. Jose Caballero is probably my favorite interview, and he was. I mean, him and Brian. Jose Caballero and Bill Erickson, who I also got to meet at Pressnomics, are two phenomenal interviews. And I think Bill Erickson took the title so far of the most listened to and clicked show. But Jose Caballero comes from like that entrepreneur. He lives in LA. He's got his own startup called The School. And he's comes from, you know, starting Razor, or being one of the founding like managers, I guess you would, of Razorfish out in the LA when they had a New York and an LA office, right? So he comes from big projects, 100,000 plus agency, you know, real like network agency budget, stuff like that. And really, really out there with the competition. Like he's swimming with the sharks, and like his whole approach is that we're certainly not charging enough for what we do. And it's real simple. It's like if you, and he said it, and I won't swear on the podcast, but like he said, look, if you're a freelancer and you're doing project management, discovery, design, development, implementation, training, support, you know, customer service for one person, you're totally doing it wrong, right? With a couple expletives in there, because listen, just rattle off all the stuff you're doing. You're not charging enough money. $500, $1,000. Look at all the stuff you're doing, and that's the one that really changed me. And then Bill Erickson, just like tremendous, like analytical breakdown of like if the Terminators were web developers, it would be Bill, right? Because I mean, it's just like God. How do you do all this stuff all at once? It's amazing.
Yeah, I think the way we were talking about, there's some agencies that you just think of when you say WordPress agency. Bill tends to be the freelancer that when you say, you know, WordPress freelancer, Bill's kind of like that pinnacle of someone that's got systems down for everything and has, you know, a processor, an answer, or he's run into a situation before. And I know that I certainly learned a lot. I've never really been a freelancer full time, but I just as a person with a workflow, I learned from that interview with Bill.
Yeah. There's one thing that I did learn from Jake, and I still haven't got him on the show, like one of the very first WordPress entrepreneurs that I've known. But he said something at Pressnomics, which was amazing. And he was on a panel about distributed workforces or teams. And they talked about being a freelancer and working from home and what that means from overhead, not cost, but stress, right? And emotions and waking up and being at your place of business. And even he said it. He said, look, I come home. I'm not coming home. I'm not relieved to be home. When I come home from a trip, I'm back in the office and the stresses start to compound of being in an office is my home. And it was good to hear that from him because, you know, I guess this is more pertains to your previous question. It's good to hear that from him because we all face that. And how do we get through it? Still something that we all juggle with.
Yeah, thanks for the encouragement when I'm on my first day of working from home.
Yes, yes, yes. Yep.
It was actually one of my biggest concerns was, how am I going to balance life and work when life and work places are the same thing?
Yep. Go back to listen to Curtis McHale and Tom McFarland. This time you can truly use Tom McFarland because they both talked about that.
All right. I guess I will. you've started doing some new stuff with the Matt Report. Tell me a little bit real quickly about the Matt Report challenge and kind of what you see going forward with that.
Yeah. So, back to the piece of the pie of what the Matt Report is all about. And one, I want to do something that is, outside of the norm of WordPress. I'm not just putting out a plugin. I'm not just talking business, but I'm giving a platform to some of the early startups and then tying them together with some good advice from some great WordPress people. So the Matt Report Startup Challenge is sort of like your TechCrunch Disrupt demo day kind of thing where I've got a bunch of people who applied, over 50, which was like mind-boggling, and I still haven't caught up to reading through all the applications. I pick four of them to come on with a panel of judges. They pitch their idea. The judges give feedback as if they were going to invest into these companies. And then they get their feedback. The contestant then gets to do a little rebuttal round, like, okay, here's why I said this, or here's what I'm thinking for long-term growth. And then we sort of pick a winner at the end, or the judges pick a winner at the end. And that's about as far as I've brainstormed the idea. But that's the new thing that's going on. Plus, and you know this, podcasting, getting a little stale. I've wrote about it. You wrote about it. I don't want to just be doing interviews. You have to do something unique, like we talked about earlier. So I'm trying to mix things up a bit. Much like you are doing this podcast, but you're also going to do a much longer form piece of content to go with it, which is something I'm not really good at.
Yeah, well, it sounds really exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing what you develop with that show.
The first show was if I do say so myself, freaking awesome. I can't wait to edit it. I'm going to put a little bit more production value into it. The biggest concern for me with this series is the logistics and getting 7 people all on a Google Hangout at the same time. The first one went kind of smoothly, but I think that was because it was Columbus Day and a lot of people maybe just had the day off or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the issue going forward is getting returning judges and sifting through 50 applicants.
Well, I'm looking forward to leaving that challenge to you. So I am going to do what I hear you do to every guest, which every time it seems trips them up.
I'm stretching right now.
I'm not going to do everything. I don't want to steal all your thunder, but there's a few questions that seems to always be, what people have to sit there and churn about. So tell me a favorite book, that really has impacted you, WordPress, tech, leadership, something like that.
This one is by, oh my God, now I'm forgetting the name on the spot, and I'm forgetting the name.
I'm going to send this to all of your future
guests. The E-Myth. The E-Myth. Don't judge a book by its cover. When people were recommending this throughout the show, I was like, no, I don't want to learn about e-commerce or some electronic thing. It has nothing to do with that. It's the entrepreneurial myth. And once I took the time to read it, it was phenomenal.
Awesome. And a favorite quote that you work or live by?
This one's really easy, something my dad told me quite some time ago. Pilgrims die tending to the sheep, and pioneers die with arrows in their backs. I would rather be the pioneer under fire.
Wow. There you go. So I guess that helps drive kind of that entrepreneurial concept or spirit that you have, huh?
Yes, sir. If somebody's, you know, if you don't do it, somebody else will. And, you know, you only live once.
Awesome. And what's the best business advice that you've ever received?
It's just shipping it, just getting it done. I know it sounds cliche. Everyone says they know it sounds cliche, but it is the truth. You can't be afraid of what you have, what you've built, or else it just becomes nothing. And that's worse than shipping something that you might not be super proud of right off the bat, or you might be afraid to send out into the world. It's a big world. A lot of people will resonate with your product or service if you give it the chance.
And a key follow-up, do you keep a bottle of scotch to celebrate when you ship?
I'm actually a bourbon guy, and I don't, but it is a good idea. The cold winter is coming, so it might be something that we do soon.
Well, may I advise, you can be a bourbon guy, as I am too, but you can still celebrate with scotch. Well, man, it's been really fun talking to you and learning a little bit more about your background and where you came from. I certainly look forward to seeing where you take the Matt Report and learning more. I hope you'll open up more and more about Slocum Studio and kind of your process there. I think everybody really enjoys hearing stories from people's daily life and how they make money, not just their side projects.
Yeah.
So keep doing what you're doing. Appreciate you talking to me. Why don't you tell us kind of how we can keep up with you and your business and everything that you're doing?
Yeah. So the only URL you need to know is mattreport.com. I guess you maybe need to know it's like mattreport.com/subscribe. Join the mailing list at Matt Report on Twitter. And that'll get you connected to all the stuff that we do, all the stuff at my studio, YouTube, podcast, and all that fun stuff.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. And everybody, y'all can keep track of post status at poststat.us or post_status and follow me on Twitter at Krogsgaard. Thanks for joining in.
Thanks, Brian.